Hello, hello, hello. My name is Erica, and I'm the creator of the Bringer of Kombucha podcast, and also the writer behind the blog Bring Your Own Kombucha. As you probably know already, but just for those who are new to the podcast, I chat about all things health and wellness related. And I think I should kind of note that I'm kind of, or I shouldn't say kind of, I'm definitely anti-diet. 100% anti-diet. I'm all about incorporating a healthy lifestyle and making healthy habits. And instead of saying like, oh, I have cheat days, oh, I have days where I indulge, I just kind of look at that as that's life. You can't be perfect every day. And you don't want to be perfect every day because that'll just wreak havoc on your mental and emotional health. At least for me personally. I digress. So this week's episode, I interview Erin Wathen, who is a food addiction counselor, and she is also the author of Why Can't I Stick to My Diet? And we really get heavily into the scientific reasons why you can't stick to your diet and how to conquer weight loss goals. I actually recorded this months ago. This is like one of my first podcasts that I ever recorded. I just have been so super self-conscious up until now to release it because of my interviewing skills. Personally, it has nothing to do with Erin. Erin was phenomenal. She's a professional. So you'll hear us talking about, I'm pretty sure we talked about my pregnancy a little bit. And at that juncture, I was like, maybe a few weeks pregnant. And we'll talk a lot about what to do around the holidays, what to do, you know, after January 1st when it's the new year and you're getting psyched. You're like, I'm going to work out. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then you just can't stick to it. And she really breaks down the scientific reason, the mental reason, and how you should be approaching your lifestyle. So it's a really great episode. Lots of information. You can find her book on Amazon, Why Can't I Stick to My Diet? I will link it in the show notes. It's like $3.99, guys, if you get the online version. So just head right over and get that book. It's so good. It's so informational. And Erin's a really great person. So I'm looking forward to introducing you all to her in this episode. All right, let's jump in. Hi, everyone. And before we jump into today's podcast episode, I just want to give a big shout out to Pink Tomato Skincare. So let me preface this with I'm actually recording this ad while I'm breastfeeding, so you might hear little Elizabeth in the background. But yeah, so let's talk about Pink Tomato Skincare. And the reason I want to bring them up is because I stumbled upon them at a health and wellness event. And upon like looking further into the company, I found out that they are actually all organic. They don't test on animals. They are vegan. They use natural aromas. And they also use eco packaging, which I feel like is very hard to find. So I was able to connect with the owner, Gina, who is a badass mama. She runs this business and raises her little boy, and he is just absolutely adorable. Definitely head over to her Instagram at Pink Tomato Skincare. I use a lot of her products. I would say that my favorite product of hers, and you probably see me wearing this a lot on Instagram, is her face mask. She has this pink face mask that is basically a rejuvenating cold facial, and you can put it in the freezer or in the fridge, whichever you prefer. I always put it in the freezer, and then you wear it for about like 15 minutes after you apply your favorite face cream, and it really tightens up your skin. It soothes your skin. It reduces the appearance of wrinkles. It reduces the size of pores, which is really ideal for basically all types of skin types. Furthermore, it actually fights acne, and it acts as acupuncture meridian that promotes circulation, helping, you know, rejuvenate the skin. So there's a lot of benefits to that one. And then my second favorite product is actually, you can use it for babies as well, but I use this prior to having Lizzie. It's called a konjac sponge. And Gina actually creates a couple different varieties, but for the most part, all three varieties are 100% natural. They're made without preservatives. They're made without artificial coloring, without chemical additives, no artificial chemicals. It's 100% biodegradable. And basically the purpose of a konjac sponge is that it starts out dry and it becomes hard. And then when you soak the sponge in water, you squeeze it and use it all over your body and face with circular motions. And it gently balances the pH of your skin. And you know that it's the real deal when it was actually created for babies. But because of the amazing qualities of it, adults started using it and seeing their positive effects. So I encourage you all to head over to www.pinktomatoskincare.com and try out Gina's product. She's also on Instagram and Facebook. And again, you can just find her at Pink Tomato Skincare. And for a sweet discount, you can use BYOK18 and make sure the BYOK is capitalized. And Gina will hook you up with, just a sweet discount for being a listener of the BYOK podcast. So head over there and check her out. Hi, Erin. Welcome to the Bring Your Own Kombucha podcast. I'm so happy to have you on today. For those of you that don't know Erin, she's a mom, she's a wife, she's a food addiction counselor, she's a holistic health coach, and also she has a long list of workout instructor in her arsenal, from spinning to yoga to Pilates to cycling. She really does it all. So Erin, do you want to just give a brief background about yourself?
Sure.
And if I missed anything.
I have two kids. I live in the suburbs, you know, living the dream here. I'm like any other woman who's grown up in our society trying to figure it all out. And I just got to a place where I figured there had to be a better way. And I'd been in the fitness industry after my first child was born, mostly as a way to get a little bit of balance in my life, because I felt like all I was doing was talking to other stay-at-home moms. And so when I started doing bunches of group exercise, and I wasn't really getting as thin as I thought I should be, and so I would jump from exercise to exercise, which is why I'm certified in so many things. And I would never really drop the weight I thought I should be, because I was like, I need to try the next one. And since I'm over there, I might as well get certified in it so I could, you know, do it more often or whatever. And it wasn't until I got really honest with what I was, you know, eating, that I was able to lose the weight that I always wanted to lose. But more importantly, I was able to stop thinking about my weight constantly and to stop obsessing about what I was eating and if I was going to burn it off and if I was going to be skinny by Friday, and just the constant conversation in my head that I've been having since I was 14 about how much I weighed and how much I wanted to weigh and how many calories were in an apple, because I'd been having that, you know, that back of my mind noise for so long that once it was gone, I had all this extra time, and so I figured I might as well write a book. So it just kind of got me in a place where I wanted to learn more, and the best thing that was able, I was really able to really hold on to and really understand that it wasn't that I was a bad person. It wasn't that I hadn't found the right diet. It was that fundamentally diets don't work. And also, which we've been hearing forever, but I never understood why people said that. But for me, what finally worked was understanding the science behind it all, and the brain chemistry part of why I couldn't stop eating sugar and why other people didn't seem to care about sugar, and it just seemed like such a strange thing. And I didn't really understand, like, what the heck was going on until I was able to learn all of the stuff behind, like, the chemical makeup of our food and, like, NutraSweet and all the stuff that I've been eating my whole life and never realizing what it was doing to me because I've been eating it my whole life. And so that's what got me on this path where I became a holistic health coach and a food addiction counselor. And I wrote a book and got me on this path where, like, I had to learn how to use Instagram at 40. It's like a very, very strange thing that I never thought that I'd ever be on, but I'm really glad I am because it's opened up tons of opportunities that, you know, makes me realize that all that nonsense I went through was actually all for very good cause.
And very beneficial for the rest of us, because I absolutely loved your book. We're going to get to that in a minute. But I want to talk about how you are one of the few food addiction counselors in the world. How did you become one, and why are there so few of them?
There are a lot. Well, not. There aren't a ton of us because it's sort of an up-and-coming field, first of all. Second of all, there are more of us outside of the United States. Americans seem to not like the idea, even though most people are addicted to food in America in a big way. It just makes them very uncomfortable. Like, people are fine with being addicted to gambling or, you know, drugs and alcohol, but you tell them they could be addicted to soda and they, like, lose their mind. So it's very unusual to be a food addiction counselor. I was actually certified by an Icelandic woman with the help of someone from Sweden, and people in my class were from Jordan and Australia. I mean, it was like the UN, right? But food's pretty universal. Like, everyone's got to eat, right? But the difference is, in all these other countries, food addiction is a fact. Like, in the UAE, it's a fact. In most of Europe, it's a fact. Even in Canada, Canadians, right? It's a fact that they have a 30-day live-in food addiction treatment center, same way we would have a live-in alcoholism treatment center. The government pays for in Canada. So we're really behind Americans, probably for a million different reasons. So it is actually a lot bigger of a deal than we're aware of. But in America, if people get very uncomfortable, it's usually something I don't highlight right away when I'm introducing myself, because it's like, wait, what are you talking about?
Right.
And then I have a couple questions I usually kind of worm my way in to getting them to understand it, because it's not that I think people are, like, secretly, like, in dark alleys, like, you know, eating a Snickers bar, but it's because it's so acceptable. You don't need to be in a dark alley eating a Snickers bar. I can send my 8-year-old into a store and he can buy a Snickers bar because we say that's cool. That's okay to us. While other things that are equally as addicting and equally as damaging aren't deemed acceptable. So that's why I think it's such a weird time to be a food addiction counselor, because we all agree that, you know, the obesity rates are off the charts. We agree that there's all these problems. However, what are we actually doing about it as a society or a culture? Not much.
Right.
I mean, just for one thing, all the tobacco packaging, all the other stuff took decades, right? Decades for them to decide that, like, you know, hey, we need to, like, do this with tobacco packaging, and on and on and on. And I think it was Barry Sears, who's one of the big diet doctors, who said that he feels like sugar is going in this direction, and, like, in, like, 10 years, everything with sugar is going to be labeled, like, you know, will cause cancer, will cause inflammation, because we're on that cusp of people really becoming aware. But right now, most people don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
That's a big reason.
That's funny that you brought that up, because I actually highlighted that in your book. You spoke about an analogy where you spoke to a leading expert on the war against sugar. And he said, in 20, 30 years from now, we're going to look at how we eat sugar comparative to how people are disgusted with how they, you know, smoking cigarettes. And I just thought that was such an interesting analogy, because I do kind of feel like we're on the brink of this, you know, battle against sugar, but we're just not yet there.
Especially if you've ever seen, like, Mad Men, you know, the mom's pregnant, she's smoking a cigarette, and you watch it, you just, like, wince.
Yeah.
But when I spoke to my mother about it, she's like, that's just how life was. Like, mm-hmm. you never thought about it. And so using that same concept, I'm like, so when I'm, you know, older, is it going to be the same thing when you see pictures of, you know, kids getting sodas in movie theaters? Is it going to be, like, that sort of generational thing where, oh, in the early 2010s, Americans let their kids have this, and then now we just, what the heck were they thinking?
Yeah, yeah.
It's because, you know, we're not doing ourselves any favors, but.
We definitely aren't. And then I just want to also touch on, what are your credentials as a holistic health coach? So how did you become that?
I went to Institute for Integrative Nutrition in New York City. So it's like a year-long online program. It's pretty common. It's really cool in which you learn, like, so many different theories. You learn, like, veganism. You learn paleo. You learn, like, every single concept of dietary theories, right? So you learn, like, some people are really into this. Some people are really into that. And they don't really preach, like, you have to eat one way. They're just sort of, like, these are all these different ideas.
Right.
And so they are more like, you know, you take your client, you know, you're with them. But what I really got from that was, it's not just about your food, because you can have the best diet in the world, but if the rest of your life is miserable, are you healthy? Not really.
Right.
So, you know, if you've, like, when I always talk to a client, or even just a regular old person, and yeah, it's really cool if you eat, you know, organic, everything's perfect. But that's just one piece of your life. It's just one piece. So every once in a while you eat horribly, okay, fine. But if that meant you spend more time with your kids, and you got more sleep, and all these other good things, whatever. So it all balances out. So that's what I really got from it as far as, like, a background. Yeah, I can tell you to talk a lot about, like, macronutrients if you want. But what I end up using on a regular basis is more of a just a balance or holistic approach to what's the best thing for my client or even my reader overall, you know, when I write a blog post or I write an article, because not everybody wants to spend hours and hours researching protein bars.
Definitely not.
Like, no, I want to go with my life.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can do that and I can understand what the back of the box means, but for those of us that have lives, right? I'm like, which one is the least horrible? Right?
Yeah.
So, and I get that, because there's some different areas of my life where I'm like, just someone tell me what to do. So because I understand the science behind it, I can tell you, like, well, this is the least of the worst. So that's what I got from IIN. A lot of people take their IIN certification and do other things with it. Like, some open, like, meal delivery services, like Sakara Life in Manhattan. Or that those are IIN graduates. So it's kind of a good building block for a lot of people.
I like
that. Stepping stone or starting place or whatever.
I like that. I find that really interesting. I've actually toyed with the idea of taking classes there as well. So I like hearing that good feedback. So I kind of want to dive deep into your book, Why Can't I Stick to My Diet? It really resonated with me. Especially in the beginning, you talked about the trifecta from hell, which was your Diet Coke, your coffee with sweetener, and candy. And I feel like we've all been at that stage in our life where we just, you know, binge on Diet Coke and, you know, we can't go a morning without all that sugar in our coffee. And we know that sugar is the problem, but there's actually science behind it where your body is like, you know, oh, once you have more sugar in you, your body is actually demanding more sugar. So can you just kind of go through the science behind why that is?
Basically, not to bore you with all of the talk about, like, your stomach, you know, the gut biome and stuff, it's progressive. So if you used to need, you know, X amount of sugar to sustain you through the day, right? You used to just be able to have a grande mocha. I think I got the Starbucks sizes wrong. Used to be able to just to get to a grande mocha, and that was enough sugar for you. There will be a point where you'll need, is the venti larger than the grande? Because I know the Starbucks size.
It is.
You'll need the next bump, essentially. You'll need the next thing, because that amount of sugar won't be enough, because the sugar will demand more sugar. And then once you have the venti, then that won't be enough. And so if you want to say you want to stop your sugaring at like 11 in the morning, good luck. Because the rest of your, then you're going to have a crash. So you're going to have all that sugar in your system, and you're either going to have to just feel horrible because your blood sugar crashed, and you know what that's going to be about, or you have to just keep sugaring yourself or stimulating yourself or something. So the end result is you're going to keep on adding to your progression of sugar requirements. So that is why the venti no longer covers it, and you're going either grande or whatever the sizes are, because it is progressive. And that's the same way almost any other addiction is. If you've ever known someone that suffered from an addiction, they used to have this amount of cigarettes or this amount of alcohol, and over time they end up smoking more or drinking more because they don't get the same amount of satisfaction from it. And if you've ever watched a little kid with Halloween candy, you can see it in motion.
For real. Totally.
Yeah.
So what is it in your brain? In your book, you talk about a perpetually hijacked brain because of the sugar. Like, what exactly is that? Like, what happens to our brain?
It's your pleasure sensors. So when you have sugar in your brain, like, your body's, like, so happy, right? Because you have the temporary, really, really, you think about when you have sugar, like, for, like, 20 minutes, like, that was a really good decision. And then everything goes down. That's because the sugar's worn off. And that's when you have a choice to have more sugar or to feel worse than you did before. That's because it's wearing off. So you either, because the sugar is so short acting, you can either have more and go back up, or you can have the inevitable crash. So by a hijacked brain, it's like from forces inside of you, almost like a hijacker, you have no choice. You're either going to feel horrible, or you're going to have to choose to have more sugar. Either choice is awful, because you're either going to feel horrible or you're going to make the same decision 20 minutes later. And you do this enough times, and your entire day you're just feeding it, right? I know it's a personal experience. Next thing you know, you have, you know, Starburst everywhere in your life, or you have gummy bears everywhere. But also the thing is too worth saying is that if you were like me and you had a Diet Coke, a love affair with Diet Coke, NutraSweet or all artificial sweetener can also play an interesting part in this whole thing, the trifecta as I call it, because your body can get tricked for a while from Diet Coke. So even if you don't have sugar, the Diet Coke can confuse it enough that for a while you might be able to be like, oh, okay, I got something sweet. But then eventually your body is like pissed off because they realize nothing sweet ever came around, and they want the real sweetener. So then you're eating even more sugar. So the whole thing, you're trying to catch up with this never-ending beast that is demanding more sugar. And that's why there are studies that people that drink Diet Coke actually weigh more than people that drink regular Coke, which is just strange and seems the antithesis of logic, until you understand what exactly NutraSweet, you know, artificial sweetener, or whatever their sweetener they're using this week, aspartame or whatever, does to your brain. Because what everyone likes about it is it's the satisfaction of being sweet without any of the calories or sugar. Well, the downside is it's the satisfaction of being sweet initially, but then your dopamine's like, well, where the heck is the sugar? And it's going to keep demanding it until you do something with it. So that's often why I remember seeing girls when I lived in the city, and they'd have a giant, like, frozen yogurt with, like, a Diet Coke. It was always, like, you know, they were double fisting it. And then there was, like, tons of, like, gummy bears on top of the Froyo. Because that was, like, you know, the diet of champions, right? So that's why people end up eating a lot of sugar. It's not because they mean to. It's just they start off with artificial sweetener in the morning and their coffee, and they end the day with more and more sugar. It's just a whole mess.
Sounds like a vicious cycle. Is it true that women are more susceptible because of their hormones and PMS to sugar cravings?
Yes, because basically once a month, after we ovulate our progesterone. So, you know, assuming you're not pregnant, after you ovulate, your appetite will increase naturally after you ovulate, just in the evolutionary idea that you're going to have a baby, right? Because every month, woman could childbearing years have a baby. So your appetite will increase. So PMS is not just something we made up. So if we feel hungrier in that week after or before our periods, it's not just an urban legend.
What a relief, right?
Right. Yeah, we're not crazy, so bring on the pizza. So we are hungrier that week. It's not just something that we think we are hungrier for. So already, we already kind of have this ebb and flow of our hormones and our hunger. So we're more susceptible that way. And then also, society is very hard on us. Most of us have been on diets from the time we were teenagers. There's that. A lot of us have a lot of body image issues. I've yet to meet the woman who thinks they look good all the time. And I had a roommate that was a swimsuit model in graduate school. So there's a lot of forces against us, but also the biology of the amazing amount of hormones that are in our system. And, you know, when I was pregnant, I was very aware of, like, things that smelled so good when I was pregnant that never smelled good after, or vice versa, because it's an amazing amount of just estrogen and progesterone. And I mean, you're growing a human, right? And in some ways, that's an amazing thing, and you have a baby, blah, blah, blah. But when that turns against you after you have a baby and all hell breaks loose and you're crying over nothing, then you can see, like, how powerful your hormones are. So that's also why we're more susceptible to, like, just all this food stuff. So society's against us in this way. And then also, like, internally, our brains are much more likely to just need more food and different amounts of food depending on the month. And then if you're nursing, you need more. And that's also assuming that we aren't emotional eaters, which a lot of us are, because a lot of us were raised not to speak up, not to say what we really want, not to say how we really feel. And from a young age, at least I know I always would go to food when I was upset, or food when I was mad, or food when I was, you know, finished that sentence. So it wasn't until I was older when I was able to be okay with being uncomfortable with the feeling and realize the world wouldn't end if I felt how mad I was at my husband or how annoyed I was at my sister or any of those things, that I was also able to get a handle on it. Because it kind of went hand in hand with, you know, being able to be uncomfortable with your feelings and also the sugar, because I used to just eat sugar when I was, you know, anything, right? Awake.
Right.
But also now that I'm on the other side of it, and trust me, my life still is my life. Like, I mean, trust me, like, I have the same crap I've always had. It's just, I don't go to food anymore. Like, food is where it should have always been. It just never was for me. So that is a very unusual thing that I've had to kind of be like, oh, interesting. So normal people just eat. Wow. No way. But because for so many years, and I know a lot of women have the same thing, successful, hugely successful women who earn 7 and 8 figures a year, they don't want to give speeches because they don't feel good about their bodies all the time. You're like, oh my God, she's such a rock star. But, you know, they're crying in the bathroom because of, you know, whatever, eating cookies. So it happens to all of us. It happens to little girls, happens to older women. It's just like, it's a constant thing. But it's never going to get any better if we're afraid to talk about it. And I'm like, I'll talk about it, you know, because I think it's nothing to be ashamed of. And we just need to, like, just rip the Band-Aid off. Because if you sit with a really uncomfortable feeling for 20 minutes and the world keeps rotating, you can do it again next time. But that first 20 minutes, it stinks so bad. And I have clients all the time that are like crying in the bathroom. They're like, so I had this horrible thing. And I'm like, okay, I just had a feeling, you know. Because things are always going pretty well. They're not eating sugar. And so it's this honeymoon period. And I'm always kind of waiting for the first crisis. Because there always is one. You know, it's always, right?
Of course.
And so I'm kind of always holding my breath. I'm like, when's the first crash? And then when there is, I'm like, oh, good, okay. And then, you know, they're in the bathroom. They're like, I don't want to go to the kitchen. And I'm like, okay, what happened? And my sister, I'm like, what did she do this time? And so, you know, talking them through it or texting them through it or whatever. And just saying, okay, so, you know, let's talk about it. Let's live through it. Let's think about it. And that's usually enough to get them over the hump. And it isn't magic what I did. It's something that we can all do. We just never taught how to do it. So I always say to my clients, like, we're going to start with getting you off of sugar. We're going to start with getting you off of all this food. We're going to end with improving your life. And they're always like, yeah, okay, whatever. I just want to lose 10 pounds. And so, like, whatever you should do, okay. But they'll see, like, at the end of, like, you know, the 60 or 90 days, whatever they want to do with me, yeah, they've lost 10 or 15 pounds, but they also demanded that promotion at work, and they also, you know, got rid of the toxic best friend in the third grade, and all this other stuff, not because I told them to, but because they felt so much better about themselves, they were able to be like, you know what, that's not working for me anymore. Or to be like, you know, that is, but I deserve a raise. So, in a lot of ways, our weight holds us back. And we don't even realize it until we have a little perspective away from it.
Absolutely. That totally makes sense. And I can totally relate to that. So how do you walk your clients through these transformations? I mean, you talk in your book about the phases of change and how you have these steps that you do with them. How does that work?
Well, that's the thing. Is a lot of them think they're ready and they really, really want to be ready, but then the first obstacle comes and they're like, I can tell. They're like, they see my number and they hit decline. It's like, really, the two ring thing, really? Because, you know, and then I have the excuses, and that's fine, I get that, but I also know that it's very scary to put yourself out there. To truly do it, because you can be in contemplation for years, decades even, but until you're truly ready, and there's that whole expression now, like, what is your why, which sometimes people misuse this expression all the time. You have to read the book to really understand what the guy's talking about, but it's about what's your true motivation. If your true motivation is you just want to look good in a bathing suit, you're not going to keep it, because that is superficial. That is other people's perceptions. But if you really want to, like, you know, be your best self or live in a world without diets or come into your own power, that's about you. So that kind of a motivation, that will last. But if you just want to show your ex-boyfriend what he's missing, not so much. So I really get to know my clients very, very well. I always have them, you know, write a lot in the beginning, because I really want to get to know, like, what do they want out of this? Because it's not just, I went away, you know, 115 or something. Okay, whatever. But what do you want your life to look like? Because like I said about, you know, your relationships and your job and whatever, because it's not just what you weigh. It's also how you carry yourself and how you are as a woman, as a human being, and as a citizen and everything else. That in some ways, it really all is, you know, it's really all interwoven together. So when I have my clients, you know, write a letter to themselves or whatever they, I can just kind of tell how open they are to how I phrase it. I want them to go through all of the steps, all of the, you know, what you're like in a year, and not just what you're wearing or what size you're wearing, but who your friends are, like how you actually feel in your own skin, because that's usually what a lot of people really resonate with, is they really want to feel better, or they want to feel happier, or they don't want to feel ashamed of what they ate. They just want to go about living. So to be able to really connect with them one-on-one is really the best way I've found to talk to women about their weight. And also, I've been there, and I get it. But I also understand if you're not really ready yet. Because there are lots of times I pretended I was ready oh, I really wanted to be ready, but I really wasn't ready.
Right.
So I go to Weight Watchers, and I would, like, lose the same 8 pounds. You know, it was always the same 8 pounds. I don't know, it was like, yeah, yeah. And because I was never really willing to do the work, because the real work sucks at first.
It totally does.
It's like, you know, when you, like, really don't want to clean out your closet because you have to be a pain in the butt, and you just keep avoiding it, and you just keep shutting the door. Only times a million. So, because when you really get to, like, because in a certain way, like, when you're overweight or hiding behind sugar or whatever it is, on a certain level, that is serving a purpose in your life. It's doing something for you, which is a really hard thing to admit. Like, how is being overweight helping me? Like, it's, you know, they're like, get really mad at me and defensive and like, very, bleh. Well, hold on a second. Because you're overweight, you didn't ever really have to put yourself out there with your career. And you could stay at home with the kids and never really have to, you know, A, B, and C. And so let's really get in there. And they don't like that. But you don't want to hide out anymore. And you don't want to hide behind your kids and your husband anymore. You want to, you know, open up a business or whatever the heck they want. So we don't need to have this extra, you know, 40 pounds. Because that's the stuff that really, really has to be done, or else you're just like losing the same 8 pounds. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I love that your transformation includes, you know, building confidence. That you're right. It's not just losing 8 pounds. It's not just removing sugar from your diet. It's really transforming your life and taking you to, I mean, places you don't even realize that you can be going.
But I also feel like everyone has this idea that they're supposed to be comfortable all the time.
That's also very true. That's how you grow in uncomfortable situations. I mean, that's how you navigate life. So
like, and I know that I taught group exercise for way too long, but I always used to tell, like, my spin class, like, if you want to be comfortable in your skin the rest of the time, you have to be uncomfortable in here for, like, the next 2 minutes. And then be like, ah, happy old Aaron. But it's true, because, like, if you're willing to just go to, like, the gross, ugly places in your brain, then maybe we can talk about, like, why in the heck you were, you know, doing these self-destructive behaviors? Because most of us know better. We're smart. We're accomplished. We have degrees. We have good jobs. You know, we're making it happen at home. You know, we're, all this stuff. And we're letting food rule our lives. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I was a smart girl. Like, what the hell? Why is high fructose corn syrup, like, my boss? That was, and that's just weird, right? Well, not really when I broke it down. But breaking it down wasn't, I mean, I avoided that forever because that wasn't fun. I mean, ick. So I get it. I get why people don't want to do it.
So how do you feel about cheat days? Because I feel like, you know, a lot of people support cheat days. You know, we all need cheat day here or there. But me personally, I resonated what you were saying in your book, and I would really like you to explain that to everybody because I feel like it's a really good philosophy.
My take on cheat days is the bad boyfriend analogy. When I talked about breaking up with sugar, and I used the Taylor Swift song, "We're Never Getting Back Together," like, ever, I talk about how sugar is like the worst boyfriend in the world you've ever had. You keep crawling back to him and you do the booty call with him, and we all know where it's going to end. You're going to end up on this couch with your girlfriend watching The Notebook crying. But at 2 a.m., you call him just to say hey, and we all know where it's going to end, right? That's the cheat day, as far as I'm concerned. It's the 2 a.m. booty call. So if we understand that, like, hey, you know, nachos really don't work for me because it makes me crazy and makes me bloated, and the next thing I know, I'm face first and a thing of fish food, and, you know, it just, I can't have nachos, right? If we understand this, and then once a month we're like, we're going to have a nacho day, it psychologically is just a huge confusion, your body is like, what are you doing to us? Because those sorts of foods are almost always really hard to digest. It's always like, you know, high caloric, low nutrition, almost always processed. It's really, really bad as far as digestion to have like just junk. And a lot of the cheat day mentality that I see on Instagram or social media is always like these milkshakes, like 8 feet tall with like gummy bears everywhere. And I remember the cheat day concept that I was aware of like 4 or 5 years ago was when paleo kind of became bigger. And I remember my trainer saying, it's just a psychological break people need. Sort of like, all right, whatever. And then when I started becoming more involved with nutrition and understanding it more, and I tried to have a cheat day, and it became like a cheat weekend and a cheat week and a cheat month, I realized, whoa, because the chemicals in the food, this is a whole different idea, especially sugar, knowing that sugar wants more sugar. So if you've gotten off of sugar for a month and then you go on a bender, your body's going to be like, oh, great, she realized we get sugar again. It's going to be really hard for you to get off of it. But psychologically, I want people to stop thinking those, just get new habits. It's like, you know, no more milkshakes that are taller than you are. Let's find other ways to have fun that aren't about food. Because look at where food got us. Food got us in a ditch. Food got us overweight, unhappy, and with a boyfriend we hated, right? So let's learn from our mistakes and stop pretending that this ever works out well. This never ends well. You know, the nacho fest, the milkshake fest, whatever. So, yeah, I'm not saying all you eat is chicken breast and broccoli, but the whole cheat day idea, I've never seen it done well. And even people in like bodybuilding competitions, after they've starved themselves for 8 weeks and everything, and they decide to eat a whole pizza, they are sick as dogs because they've just messed with themselves and it's this whole mind thing. So it's better overall to have consistent habits and have your fun from life. Like, you know, everything else but food. So your relationships.
There's definitely other ways to socialize than just eating food and milkshakes and.
Yeah, and so like, you know, maybe you need to figure out like, why is food the only way I can have fun? Like, let's drill down on that for a while. Because with a lot of people, they get very like, what do you mean, no cheat days? And I'm like, look, I understand the concept behind them, and I try to get them to work for me a million times. But for my clients, and I've seen it happen a million times, and trust me, Christmas was a disaster. Because like, I only cheated a little bit. And it was like, they end up being 10 pounds. I'm like, okay. So you cheating a little bit, meaning from the 15th of December to like 5th.
Oh my goodness.
Because like they couldn't stop and they felt guilty. And they pretended like my phone didn't exist. And then all this other stuff happened because it's like this a very slippery slope. And then there's something else I want to throw in there before I wrap this up. There's this thing called euphoric recall. So when we haven't had food in a while, and it's like really an addictive food, like sugar, NutraSweet, or like really processed foods, and our body is so happy it came back, it's like the bad boyfriend, there's this thing called euphoric recall, in which it actually tastes better than it would for a normal person. So if we've eliminated the milkshakes, right, we get rid of them, we're like all new and improved, and then we decide we're not, and I'm like, oh my God, this tastes amazing. It actually would taste better for me than for you because you weren't getting off of that. So that's why when food addicts have relapses, they can't control themselves because everything does taste better initially. And then it doesn't, which is a whole nother conversation. So the cheat day thing, it's like you're inviting euphoric recall back. You're inviting all these bad boyfriends back into your lives. So let's just not do the booty call and pretend that it's going to end well. So just turn off your phone and go to bed.
I love that analogy. And actually, that makes total sense because personally, I've done like every diet possible. And at one point, I was doing Isagenix, but you can only have, you know, shakes and like very limited food and whatnot. And I'm telling you, as soon as I went off of it and I would have like a slice of pizza or whatever, I swear it was like the best slice of pizza in the whole entire world. And like you're saying, like it probably really wasn't a great slice of pizza. It was just a euphoric recall, which is insane.
And your body's going against you because it really wanted to have it.
Yeah, and then you end up having twice as much as you probably would have prior to the diet.
Yeah, no, it's actually, like, really nuts when you find out how much your body will work against you to get these crappy foods in. And you're like, I thought we were in it together, body.
Right.
But then you can also take a step back and be like, it wasn't my fault. Like, there were a lot, but it's also the food we have. Like, our grandparents didn't have these foods. Like, this is all new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's all processed and modified. And now, I mean, we're not doing this over bananas.
You're right.
You know, and like steak. It's never stuff that was been around forever. It's all the new processed, you know, just gross stuff. So when we know all these things, at least for me, it really helped me understand, like, oh, that's why that ugly incident happened.
So yeah. What do you recommend we do when we get these cravings and we don't want to encourage a cheat day? Like, what do you do to combat these cravings?
Meaning, like, you need something salty, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, just, you know, are there any ways around it, any ways to work against your body, I guess, or... any, I guess, like, no sugar snacks that you think might trick your body or satisfy these cravings?
Well, I would say as far as your cravings, the whole craving concept, I think sometimes people misuse the word. There's things we want. Like, I really want that. And so they say it's a craving. And I'm like, okay, fine. So... if you want something salty, there's a lot of things you can have with salt that isn't, you know, a huge bag of Fritos, right? But I found, for me, the best way to not have all those extreme feelings is to have a diet with lots of fat in it and a lot of protein. Not crazy fat, but just a good amount of fat, lots of water, lots of sleep. You know, just kind of having a very measured amount of food on a regular basis, not living in the extremes like I once was, like not dieting and binging and over-exercising, any of that crazy crap. That seems to have really made my appetite pretty regulated. So as far as like cravings, I feel like whenever we've eliminated a lot of the sugars from our systems, it takes like 60 to 90 days to fully get rid of sugar from your body. And then if your diet has, your food plan has a lot of fat and protein and just real food in it, all those cravings will kind of work itself out. Also, don't put yourself in crazy situations. Like if you know everyone is going to a cookie making party and you just cannot be around it, get out of it. You know, like, I have an entire list of like ways to get out of stuff at the end of my book. Like, ways to lie to get out of stuff.
Which is totally helpful.
Yeah, no, right? Just because I remember like right away when I was trying to get off of sugar, my daughter wanted to make cupcakes and I got in this like really stupid fight with my husband over this thing he told me we were supposed to go to, which I know he didn't tell me we were supposed to go to it. I will forever go to my grave saying he did not tell me about this. And I just have a problem with frosting. I know it sounds really silly to a lot of people, but like buttercream frosting, can't be around it. And so my daughter went to make cupcakes. And of course, when he left, I ate like a whole ton of it because it's all his fault, right? But
obviously.
I shouldn't put myself in that situation. So as much as it is, this is always his fault, and will for always be his fault for being so insensitive and clueless and thoughtless, I also should not have been like, hey, well, I'm going to wave a red flag in front of you. So, yes, there's still always sugar in my life. There's still sugar in my house right now. I still have children in my house. There's candy downstairs. I'm not going to pretend there isn't. But there's certain things I know I can't be around. They aren't in my house. So I'm very aware of those things. So the cravings have stopped a ton since I don't have things that I know I can't be around in my vicinity.
I love those tips. Those are really helpful. So where do you see yourself in 2018? Do you have another book on board? Where's your practice going? I feel like 2017 was such a busy year for you.
Yeah, 2017 was a really crazy one because I ended 2016 with telling my husband, like, hey, you know, we were on vacation. I was like, hey, you know, when we get home, we're on vacation. I said, I'm really going to go for it when we get back. And he was like, oh, okay. And then it took me a couple months, and then I really went for it. And he was like, all right. And so, and then this year I'm like, you know, really like getting into media, and I have all this like stuff in the works, and I have, you know, most of my second book kind of mapped out in my head.
Awesome.
Yeah, because a lot of similar things have been coming up for my clients and just questions I've gotten, because, you know, why can't I stick to my diet? A lot of it was about the sugar and what we're eating. But now that I'm, you know, having clients and talking to people a lot, and the commonalities amongst most of the women, it's those 20 minutes when we're uncomfortable. Like, that's the make or break time. And that's where I see so many of us, you know, doing the booty call thing, you know, and just making the bad choices. And, you know, from little girls, like 12 and 13 year old girls, to, you know, corporate executive women who are like, you know, you would never think in a million years. And it's like, let's just talk about it. Let's just, you know, it's only as bad as we make it out to be. So, and it's only food. Like, it's not life. Like, let's get our joy and our out of something else. So that's where I see a lot of need that I'm aware of, because I remember like 6 months ago or so, I was talking to someone and they're like, so what are you most afraid of? I love these questions, right? I'm like, and I was like, that I'm too late and I'm too old. They're like, what? And I'm like, you asked me what I was most afraid of, so I'm telling you. And I don't feel that way anymore because I don't think I'm too late. But I see a lot of common struggles that we're all going through. And I get people from all over the world that contact me, because emotional eating is not just in America. I mean, I met a woman a couple weeks ago who's basically my Australian, like, doppelganger. It's very cool. And we do the same thing, but she's, you know, Aussie. And there's a lot of need for us to just break down the barriers and just talk about this stuff, because I remember not telling my friends. I mean, I didn't really, that I was really doing all this crazy stuff. Or if I did, I downplayed it. It was just a huge ball of like misery and shame that didn't need to be there. So as far as 2018, I'm definitely like, as far as like exposure, I'm really gonna get the word out, because I feel like there's a lot of peace to be found if you know the science, and a lot of options when you know the science. Because, you know, the other day when I posted like my opinion on the keto diet, and I got a lot of angry keto people at me, it wasn't because I get any money if I don't like keto. Like, no one's paying me to like or not like keto. It's because I looked at it from my nutritional information background. I researched it for a couple of days. I don't just write my blogs in like 30 minutes. And that's why I felt the way I felt. So there's a lot of trends in food, just like there's trends in clothes. But there are some themes that kind of never go away. Vegetables, real food, water, sleep, good relationships, you know, sex or whatever. Those things are kind of always classics. So if we stick to the classics, I think we'll be fine. And all this other stuff is just kind of noise. So sometimes it might work for you, and that's super cool. But we don't need to always be looking for the next diet. And if you like it, that's great. But like you said, the isogenics thing, like there's always a new isogenics or a juice plus, or a Shakeology, you know. And those people contact me all the time now. I'm like, delete.
And it's just not sustainable. It's not a way to live. Like you said, it's about like whole food. It's about exercise. It's about mental health. I mean, you got to stick to the classics, just like you're expressing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like how, you know, you always see those articles, like, 10 things you should always have in your wardrobe. And it's like, you know, a pencil skirt.
Yeah.
That's the thing about food now. It's like, and like your life. It's like, well, you can never go wrong with eating vegetables. You can never go wrong with eating, like, a good quality cut of meat if you eat meat, or good quality, you know, meat protein, or, you know, whatever you like to eat. But, like, quality food, you're good. You know, you don't need to do all this extreme stuff if you have food in its proper place, meaning it's not your friend, it's not your secret, it's just food. So that's why I said it's just food. And don't get me wrong, I know you have to eat 3 times a day, but it's not the end all be all. So, and I also tell people, like, if you're really upset, don't eat. What? I'm like, it won't, first of all, it won't digest well. People are always thrown by that. I'm like, you'll get a stomach ache if you, like, are really upset and you eat, and you'll, like, your, it just won't work. Also, like, energetically, if you believe in these things, your food becomes your body, right? So you're inviting this organism into you to become part of you, and it still has negativity associated with it. So you think that's a good idea? So if you're really upset or whatever, you can just wait half an hour to eat something, and it'll be all right. But we're not used to doing things like that. Pausing in the middle of a meal and being like, do I even like this? Do I need to heat this up? Is this even good? Did I ever like this? We never ask ourselves these questions. Like, I always tell my clients, like, take your emotional temperature before you eat. Like, when you go to sit down, it's like, how am I feeling? Am I mad? Am I happy? Am I, you know, those are feelings charts little kids have. And then afterwards, how am I feeling? It's like, am I stuffed? Am I bloated? Am I the right kind of full? Because there is a right kind of full. And once you found it, you're like, oh my God, it exists. It's like the Holy Grail. But when we're used to either starving or stuffing, it's that happy place. It seems like it only lives for other, exists for other people. At least it did for me for a long time. But once you, like, oh, it can be for me, then suddenly food just, it gets so much lower on the order of importance, and you have so much time to do other things, like go about your life.
Right, and your whole life, like, you know, you don't think about food and the next meal all day. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. I've actually done that before, too. I'll be, like, you know, mindlessly eating in front of the TV, and then I'll just stop, and I'll be like, you know what? I'm not even hungry right now. I'm just eating to eat, and, like, I don't need to do that. So I can totally relate to that, and that makes perfect sense. So where can everybody find you, and where can they find your book, Why Can't I Stick to My Diet?
Why Can't I Stick to My Diet is on Amazon right now. It's only in PDF version. I mean, sorry,
ebook
version, like, yeah. Kindle, or get it electronically. It will be in a bookstore near you in the fall.
Awesome.
Yeah, I know. And then I can be reached at my website, which is EW Wellness Solutions, or you can always find me on Instagram, Erin Wathen Wellness, where you can see how much I don't like keto and why.
Okay, and one last question I ask everybody who comes on the podcast, which I don't know if you're going to have an answer for because of the whole sugar, but what is your favorite flavor of kombucha?
You know, I'm not an expert on it. I mean, I've tried it before, but I'm not an expert, so.
I might have to send some your way now, Erin.
You will, because, like, I'm very leery of anything in the beverage section that's not, like, seltzer or water, just on principle. So I really haven't explored your area. I'm sure it's very good stuff, and I'm sure, you know, just, I mean, to be completely honest with you.
totally get it. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I totally appreciate it.
Anytime.
And I'll talk to you later.
That's good. Thank you.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.